Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/credit card.
Ladies and gentlemen,
this is the Rich Eisen Show.
And we thank you for sharing that with us.
With guest host, Susie Schuster, live from the Rich Eisen Show studio in Los Angeles.
What do you think that means to the locker room that they bring Saquon in there?
Saquon got an opportunity to not just choose where he wants to go, but to stick it to his team. And if these teams don't like it, then pay guys.
Earlier on the show, Pro Football Hall of Famer Michael Irvin. Coming up, director of Apple TV's Dynasty Rise of the New England Patriots, Matthew Hamachek, Warriors head coach, Steve Kerr, and now sitting in for Rich, it's Susie Schuster.
Hi, everybody. Susie Schuster here with you while Rich takes a couple days off. I think he deserves it.
Yeah,
I also like
does.
To kick him out of the house every so often. And then I get to call Michael Irvin and say, hey, want to come in studio and hang out with me? Because I like to outbook my husband with guests whenever possible. And I take ownership of Michael Irvin because I knew him first.
You're
Mikey
right.
D, you can back me up on this, please.
100%.
Right.
Yes.
Right. Like, and you invited me to the wedding.
That's right.
Richie says it. I was at that wedding, and yes. And it's just so incredible that Rich and I work together now.
I love it.
All
I love it.
All these years, too. I know. I just think, I always say, when I'm doing you guys' baby name and all this was ordained that we were together. We're going to be together. You know how much I love you, Susie, and everything that even things that I deal with my family. And you've always Susie's been there for all of us though. Everybody, Susie's like the mom of everybody. You know, no matter what goes on and everybody's for anybody's family, Susie calling to make sure anybody on our desk on our team. She's going to call to make sure they're okay. She's like the mom. That's why we love her so much.
Oh, you know how I feel about you. But, I mean, I could go on about that all day. I love that you're here. I love that you raced down the 405 to be with us. So I really do appreciate it, I have to say. And he was my friend first, but that's enough. All right. So, I mean, ownership, right? Let's go Cowboys because that's what everyone's waiting for, right?
Right.
Is there any part of you that is thinking, why aren't they making bigger moves?
And let me tell you, there are two things that here, I said, okay, we could have. And there's one thing that I will say, that's the only time I was okay. Only thing I'm okay with if Jerry's going to stretch it. Now, I'll take the front end first. I would love to see Derrick Henry become a Cowboy. Great. Now, why you say Derrick Henry, Michael? Because I believe Cowboys, they needed a hammer since Zeke left. Somebody that makes a physical run, and Derrick Henry makes his physical runs. He's the best. He's the best at it. And he's still salty. You know, he still has something left in the tank. He's a physical runner. We could have used that hammer. And you're disappointed because I thought Derrick Henry should be out of the price range, $15, $16, $17 million a year back. Still, he's worth that. But they really got him on a $9 million deal, one-year deal for $9 million. You gave Tony Pollard $10 last year. I thought Derrick Henry was a possibility and you could have done that. Now, the only person in this early run that I wish Jerry could have done, and I would have said, stretch the money for that. Stretch the money. It's Christian Wilkins. That big fella that the Raiders just signed, if the Cowboys could have gotten a big fella like that, and I know it's $85 million guarantee, it's a lot of money, but that speaks to your leak. That's where you've been leaking, right there. Big defensive tackle that can also get to the quarterback, that can stop and help with the run defense and put less pressure on the linebackers that you don't have. I mean, Kendricks is a great pickup, and we needed that. So, yeah. But all that other guy, all that other stuff that passed by, I would let pass on by. The only player I would have said stretch that pocket for, the Raiders got him.
Yeah.
And you didn't have to stretch the pocket for Derrick. Henry. I wish you would have gotten him.
Yeah, he sure made Max Crosby happy. Stephen Jones just spoke about the Cowboys free agency moves. Let's hear from him now.
Yeah, what did he say? I want to hear this.
I don't look at it as the next few weeks. I look at it as, you know, all the way up and through the season in terms of, you know, how we continue to address this. And, you know, just as we all see, that first day, first negotiating day, you know, it's wild and it's big, big, big dollars. And but then as you see now, things are calming down. And, you know, that's where we think, you know, you can be efficient and do good things. I think we have in the past, and whether it's via a trade or whether it's via just a like we did yesterday with Kendricks, I'm sure there'll be more players released around the league as people move forward and work within their cap. So you never know what you might see that you don't see today. So those are all things that we feel very prepared to make quick decisions on, and I look forward to it.
What do you think?
Yeah, and you know, and Jerry's always been that with that philosophy and passed down that philosophy to Stevens, and I think he's right there. That first few, those first few days, you overpay. You overpay. Now, if we all think back, you can't tell me someone that you remember getting pulled over, getting a big deal in those first few days that just went and turned it out for wherever they went and they got full value for the overpricing. You're going to be overpriced because everybody's betting and battling. So the number keep moving. You wait to that first tier fall. There's a lot of talent still left on the football, left in free agency, and a lot of talent still will be coming open where you can find some good deals and some good bargains. The Cowboys are up against it because they got to sign back Dak Prescott. They got to go sign CeeDee Lamb, and they got. I think they should look into making sure they lock down Michael Parsons right now, because no doubt he's going to be. Each year is going to cost you more money to sign him. So I would say you lock him down right now. But you have those things. That's why I'm saying don't go crazy. You can't overspend on someone. And we all base this off of Deion Sanders and Charles Haley. And when Jerry got a Deion Sanders, that made a difference. Jerry got a Charles Haley, that made a difference. I don't see any guy outside of that Christian Wilkins guy that two would have brung in. I said, oh, my God. That's going to make a difference that you will have to overpay. I would, like I said earlier, would have liked to seen Derrick Henry. I mean, the big guy go over there, Derrick Henry go over there. Because I thought that was something that was viable. You could have got that. That was within the money structure. If I had $10 million at the running back slot last year, he's got $9 now. And the salary cap went up. So, yeah, I thought that was possible. But I'm okay with everything else.
Michael Irvin here on the Rich Eisen Show. How badly does Jerry still want trophies? When we talk about the ones that you guys won, it's been a long time.
Yeah, but it's everything. It's everything. That's it. You know, everything has to work around right now. Jerry getting that one trophy. When he gets the one, I believe he'll be able to raise his hand like he wants to, because he wants credit. And that was the breakup. That was the breakup. And now we want to ask about how important is it for Jerry? Consider the breakup. A man went back-to-back championships, and you know, Jerry made a change. So obviously it's important to Jerry to now, after doing that 100 years ago, to make sure he at least wins a Super Bowl. It's everything. It's everything. And he wants to be able to say he did it his way, but it is everything to him.
But it's confusing to watch as just a fan. So he could have had Bill Belichick, but maybe he decided, clearly he decided it wasn't worth it. He's got Dak ahead, and he's got to decide whether Dak is his guy. He's not a young guy.
No.
This is his last, he's approaching the battlefield right now for his last attack.
Right. And but he wants to win, and he wants to do it his way. And now I always say this, guys, when you made, I don't know how much you're worth, $10 billion. It's hard to tell that guy when all of his decisions have worked out so
13.
Well for him like that.
13.
That dude, you don't know what you're doing. You know, people always say, man, get Jerry out the way. You think Jerry going to listen to your broke ass? He got $10 billion. Your ass broke. Why should he listen to you?
13,
you
know what I mean? 13, Bill Irv. You're shortchanging him.
Yeah. What's that?
He's up 13. To 13.
All right, 13, Bill. Right, yeah. right. Hey, and he's saying I hoodwinked him. Bought the Cowboy for 140. I got him up to $14 billion. Oh, that's crazy money. When you do that kind of stuff, yeah, you tend to listen to you a lot. I don't blame you for listening to you a lot either, where you can do that. So, but he wants to win. He wants to win. He just wants to do it his way. And I like some of the things, just not all of them. Like, cause sometimes you do need hope. You kept the same same coach. So you get, if you want to keep the same coach, just throw me a little bone here with a big name like a Derrick Henry to give the fan base a little more hope. Because we've done 12 wins 3 years in a row, and we were out the first round. Now you come in with a player that says, hey, this guy can change things. Now you get hope that maybe this will be a different year. And that I think you had a chance to give that fan base a little joke, and you missed it.
So you're the GM. What do you do now?
Well, I stay pat right now. And there's still my biggest concern right now, honestly, if I'm the GM, if I'm Jerry, I'm trying to find out where Tyron's going to land at, where Tyron Smith is going to land. Because, you know, he made about $8 million last year, and he really is one of the better tackles in the NFL right now. So first I want to get all my guys back, try to get Tyron back, even though they said he's going. First they said he was staying out, they say he's going. And all of that's just negotiation. But that's what my focus would be, getting back those main players that I talked about, the CD, Dak, and Michael, and even Tyron. And then how can I get better? How can I go get me a little bit more help on the defensive line and some more linebacker help to shore up this run? And I would feel pretty good about that.
Here's your hypothetical. So if Dak resigns and he gets his big deal, should he restructure his contract to back end it the way Brady did to get it more players now to prove that he wants to be there and he wants to win now for Jerry?
Well, and that's just it right there. Dak, with the way these negotiations are gone with him and the league and the Cowboys, each time they've been a fight to the end. So, and for every dollar, and it has lingered and played on, and I don't think that his agent's going to change. I think that'll be the same situation. I don't think Dak's going to be saying, hey, listen, we're looking to give a friendly, team-friendly deal. They want their money, and they'll get their money because they got all the leverage. Can't franchise him, you can't trade him. He has all the leverage, so he'll get it. He'll get it, and I'm okay with that. I like that. I can't. I'm not with those people that say, "Let's go in a different direction." No. I'm on 12 wins. We've been on 12 wins. We're in the playoff, and we got a shot. I'm not okay with going back in a different direction and falling all the way back to 4, 5, and 6 wins and out of the playoffs. Let's just keep this thing moving, adding players and winning.
Would you have been tempted to see Bill Belichick there for you? Would you have liked that?
I would have liked to see Bill Belichick in Dallas. I thought he was going to Atlanta. And when Atlanta got Kirk Cousins, I said, oh, my God, why wouldn't? Now, if you had Bill Belichick, Dallas could certainly use him. Why do I say that? Dallas, when you watch that playoff game, the 33, the tight end, just ran a little quick out. I had a cornerback that was 12 yards off the tight end. What are you doing? It's 3rd and 3. Get up on him and press him. Bill Belichick pays attention to those little tiny things, those little tiny details that win football games. That's what I wanted in Dallas. I love Bill. I don't know if Bill Belichick, you know, if you're going to change Mike McCarthy, I would have loved to get Bill Belichick and tie down those little things right there. But I ain't want Bill touching the offense. I just want him to tie down those little things on defense. And I don't know if he'll be okay with just taking that side of the ball.
What's the biggest question you have for the Cowboys heading into the season?
It's still stopping the run. That's it. It's stopping the run. And who else goes on the board on game plan Wednesday? CeeDee Lamb is the first person we put on the board when the teams walk in on Wednesday. We got to stop 88. I wanted a Derrick Henry, so they said, we got to stop CeeDee and Derrick Henry. I already got the defense in conflict. You see, the Cowboys don't have that at the running back position right now.
One last question, 1 minute to go. With all the devaluation of the running backs, you got to play with Emmitt Smith.
Yeah.
So you know how valuable it is to have this great running back. So what are your thoughts on it?
It blows my mind, too. It really does. And even people now, you know, we try to play with it. Talking about, look at the rush on running backs. Stop. There's no rush on running backs. All we did was shuffle them around a little bit. We really didn't move any numbers. They didn't move the number in a great way. You know, last year the franchise number was $10 million. This year it's $12 million. You, these guys are worth. You going to tell me Derrick Henry was worth whatever you paid him, but you went and paid Ryan Tannehill $100 and some million. Saquon Barkley was worth what he was asking, but you went and paid Daniel Jones $45 million. Quarterback's not worth what you're paying. The running backs are, and you're still paying the quarterbacks. That blows my mind right there. You know what I mean? Derrick Henry and Ryan Tannehill. Who ran that team? Derrick Henry did, but Ryan Tannehill got the money. Daniel Jones, Saquon Barkley. Saquon Barkley was the catalyst of this team, but Daniel Jones got the money. What they're doing to running backs, it is. It's insane. It's incredible. And I don't buy into it. I don't buy into it because the first time the great quarterbacks that you have are not playing well, what do we say? He needs to find a running game. That's how important those running backs are.
Michael, I love you.
Yeah, I love you too, girl. You know I love you to death too. Yeah,
I do. We'll take a break. When we come back, we'll have Matthew Hamacek joining us. He's the director and executive producer of the Patriots Dynasty. It is incredible. Well, thanks again for coming in, babe.
I'm going to look at it.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Welcome to Talkville,
the ultimate Smallville rewatch podcast. Title Transference aired October 27, 2004. Director James Marshall, writers Todd Slavkin, Darren Swimmer. I really like this episode, and I'm surprised that you don't like it as much as you thought you did.
I actually respect your opinion more than I respect my own in general. When you say things are good and I check them out, they are.
Jump in now or catch up on any of the past seasons of Talkville on YouTube or wherever you listen.
So I played 11 years.
You did.
They've been to the Super Bowl 9 times.
Damn.
And I didn't get there once.
Right.
Think about that.
Right.
And I was one pick away from being drafted by the Patriots.
What happened?
The Chargers drafted
me. I know that's what happened. They didn't come up and get you.
So I went on a visit to the Patriots, and that's when Charlie Weiss was the offense coordinator. Mm-hmm. And I go to Boston, and I really liked the visit. I like Charlie. I love Charlie Weiss.
Did you meet with Bill?
I did meet with Bill. You know, we sat in his office right above the stadium, right there where you're looking out at the stadium. And we really just sat there. We really didn't talk about much. We just looked at each other.
And, what do you mean? So, what do you mean you just looked at each other?
Just kinda,
like
just
Bill was there.
Just kind of in each other's eyes, you know, I guess.
So you're saying it was awkward?
No, I mean, I just, you know how Bill is. He just, there's only a few things he probably wants to know about you. And I guess he was trying to get a sense of, you know, was I passionate about football? As most coaches do. You're
right.
Going to invest a first-round pick on a guy. You want to make sure they're passionate.
Do you think they would have chosen you if you were available?
Well, they said they were going to choose me. Charlie Weiss promised me if I was there at six, because they needed a running back. They needed a running back bad that year. And so, when the Chargers drafted me, I think they took Richard Seymour.
Richard Seymour, pick. Yep. Well, I mean,
They worked out there.
Have you ever brought up to Brady when you've seen him?
Like, no, never brought it up.
You could have been Robin, his Batman.
I always thought about, what would that be like?
With all due respect to Antoine Smith. All due respect.
Yeah, I know, right?
To Antoine Smith.
Yeah, I know. It would have been a little different.
A little different.
No way.
Yeah.
I'm kind of getting freaked out.
Welcome back to the Rich Eisen Show Radio Network. I'm sitting at the Rich Eisen Show desk, furnished by Grainger, with supplies and solutions for every industry. Grainger's got the right product for you. Just call clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Susie Schuster in for Rich, taking a couple days off. I think he deserves it. Matthew Hamacek joins us for me right now. I mean, when I tell you my excitement for having the director and executive producer of the Dynasty New England Patriots on, Matthew, I watched 3.5 hours of your doc yesterday with my son Cooper. And every minute I sat there saying, oh my God, this is the greatest doc I have ever seen. That is not without hyperbole. And it is not because I'm a Patriots fan. It's because of how you did it. So let me start with, how did this come to you?
Well, Jeff Benedict, I was working on Tiger for HBO about a couple of years ago, and Jeff Benedict had written the book that inspired that documentary. And as we were wrapping it up, you know, I'd be on the phone with Jeff, and all of a sudden, you know, I'd be like, why are you always driving so much? And he's just like, well, I'm going back up to Foxborough and back and all this kind of stuff. And then he said, you know, tell you the truth, I'm writing this book about the Patriots. And he asked me if I'd be interested in directing it. And I immediately said yes, even though I am not a Patriots fan. I root for a different team. But, you know, I think what was great is once I got across in the interview chair from the 70 plus players and coaches and front office execs and rivals that we got to talk to, I didn't really have any idea. I didn't have a preconceived notion about what the story was supposed to be. So I got to really just be curious and ask questions and sit back and let these people who were there in the room tell their story.
Wait, are you a sports fan, period? Or are
oh,
you?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Who's your team? Diehard
Packers. My dad grew up outside of Green Bay, Wisconsin. So I was indoctrinated like most, you know, children of crazed sports fanatic parents. And so I've been going to Lambeau since I was, you know, 4 years old, probably.
So right off the bat, I have to ask you, as a sports fan, you do the Tiger doc. You're doing this doc. Are you thinking, oh my God, what happened to my life? This is incredible.
I mean, it's an honor to be able to tell the stories about these people. And Tiger was totally different, though, right? Tiger was the opposite approach as this one where, you know, I didn't have Tiger's team. I didn't have Tiger himself. I didn't have anybody in the inner circle. And it was sort of from the outside in, talking to people that have gotten to know him over the years. And then, you know, what's interesting is that even though this is the I got to talk to everybody, you know, version of the story, the process is sort of the same thing. You go to these people, whether it's Tiger himself or, you know, or Tom or anybody, and you sort of say, look, I'm trying to tell the unvarnished version of this story, and it's going to be the good, the bad, and everything in between. And, you know, you build up trust with people. And then when you get them in the interview chair, you sort of ask everybody all the same questions. And the thing is, even though I wasn't a Patriots fan, the one thing I did know is that, you know, they were always they kept everybody at arm's length. And so to be able to sort of peek inside the wall and start to talk to these people was just incredible.
That's exactly it. I mean, the Patriots have always been one of the most impenetrable teams in football, and that you were able to sit there and have this unfettered access is truly what's so amazing. Did you do all of the interviews yourself?
No, I did like the vast majority of them. But, you know, there were times when we thought that there would be different people who were better at talking to different people. And it was a decision we made sort of on the fly when we were starting to do prep for the interviews. Who's the best person to talk to these people and why? But, you know, getting to sit across from Tom Brady, Bill Belichick, and Robert Kraft, and then, you know, all these people, and just really, you know, ask them about the stories, about like the way that they formed this sort of perfect machine that we've never seen before and probably will never see again. And then also to talk to them about the things about like how this thing fell apart at the seams towards the end, which is really what is being documented in the two episodes that are dropping tomorrow on Apple TV Plus.
Matthew Hamacek, the director and executive producer of The Dynasty, The New England Patriots, which you have to see on Apple if you haven't seen it yet. Just start right now. It is so enjoyable. The critics would say that this comes off like a hatchet job on Belichick. What's your answer to that?
I don't see it that way. What I see is the first five episodes were a love letter to the culture that Bill Belichick built there. And I think that, you know, I think part of the reason some people, like New Englanders who are, you know, diehard fans, there's a very vocal minority out there that's very loud about this. But, you know, I look at episode five, for example, when Brady goes out and Matt Castle comes in and Bill still goes 11-5, and people are saying, you know, I'm starting, this is what Bill Belichick's doing this season is starting to make me doubt the greatness of Tom Brady. I mean, this is a love letter to Bill. Tom Brady's up there saying, you know, I would not be the player I am without Coach Belichick. And I was speaking to another person with the coaching staff very recently, and they said, look, there is no greater thing you can hear from a player about you as a coach than when somebody like Tom Brady says something like that. So I don't agree. I think that part of this is the unvarnished telling of the story. And that means that we're going to cover everything, and it's going to be the good, the bad, and everything in between. And I maybe a little bit of is it that people just aren't used to seeing that.
I think when we talk about the bad, we talk about the Aaron Hernandez hour. It was riveting, to say the least. And at the end of it, my 13-year-old Cooper looked at me and said, wow, Mom, I had no idea. What was it like going in there to tell this story and then just finding out nugget after nugget, the amount of footage that you unearthed, whether it had been, and not giving anything away, whether it had been outside of the club or the double homicides that he was later cleared of or what have you, What was it like for you to tell this side of the story?
So one of the things that we had both via NFL Films and then within the Patriot Archive itself was, you know, 35,000 hours of never before seen footage, right? And to visualize like what that's like, the amount of tapes is, it would take two Mack trucks to fill up with these tapes that are about the size of, you know, a credit card, to just give you a sense of it. And I still will never forget when we found the one of the people that was on the project, I think it was Paul Williard, found NFL Rookie Symposium from 2010, which was the year that Aaron Hernandez and Rob Gronkowski and Devin McCourty were all drafted. And Chris Carter, the Hall of Fame wide receiver, is sitting there, and this is to the league's credit that they have things like this where they have people who come in and tell these guys, look, if you think money's going to change you for the good, you're fooling yourself. That's what Chris Carter says. And then Aaron Hernandez asked this question. And so it's finding footage like that. But what I will never forget is I was sitting across from Deion Branch, and Deion Branch obviously has an incredible sort of, you know, he was with the Patriots for a while, was Super Bowl MVP, left, then comes back. And, we were talking about all the usual things you would talk to Deion Branch about. And then all of a sudden, one of the producers, Vin DeAnton, texts me on during the interview. And he says, by the way, I think Deion might know Aaron Hernandez. And when I asked him about that, I said, tell me about Aaron. And it's actually what you see when the episode starts. Deion just goes, we called him Chico, man. And everything about Deion's, like the way he was looking, the way he was holding himself, changed. And in that moment, I sort of realized our entire philosophy, the whole of the series was, these are the guys that are there. So let's get out of the way and let them tell the story. But that episode in particular, you realize that you have to just step back and say, let these guys talk, let them say what it was like to be there. And part of that was the tragedy of Aaron Hernandez. But the other part of it is you still realize how much all of these people, including Robert Kraft, still care deeply about this guy. And so it was sort of the duality of telling the Aaron Hernandez story.
Yeah. Hey, Matthew, Chris here. I'm also a Patriots fan, so I've been loving this doc. That episode also opened with what it looked like was behind the scenes promo shoots for like Jumbotron or something.
And but
and you're tight in on Aaron and getting him to smile, getting him to laugh, look serious. That was just a chilling way to kind of begin that hour.
Well, just think about what it was like for our team to be sitting there and just you're combing through these thousands of hours of stuff. And then all of a sudden, you know, whether you're an intern or assistant editor or something, and all of a sudden you just find this thing and it's just this haunting thing. And you're thinking, I can't believe this is unfolding in front of my eyes. And, you know, whether it's that piece of footage or the Rookie Symposium or even something as simple as like, you know, when Aaron, there's a moment when Aaron's dragging a trash bag out through the locker room, mm-hmm. and it just, it gives a three-dimensionality to a person who until this point has often just been caught up in headlines. And I think that's what you're always trying to do when you're telling a story that people have, they think that they've really consumed a lot before, right? You're trying to say all of this is more complex and nuanced than the headlines or the caricature of the people is sort of, you know, led you to believe. And so that's always the goal. And when you find something new in the footage or you hear something new in one of the interviews, it completely restructures how you tell the story of that episode and how you tell like the 10-part arc of the New England Patriots.
Yeah, hearing Deion Branch just kind of talk about it, you can tell that he is still just deeply affected by the guy he thought he knew and then the person that Aaron turned out to be.
And Deion even says things like, how could you, I mean, and that's one of the opening moments for Deion. He says, how could you not see that, Deion? I think about that all the time. How could you not see that? How could you not see that? And it's, like I said, when you hear that, you're just like, all right, our job here is to let them talk and get out of the way.
What was your biggest booyah moment, like as a producer, when you find that piece of footage and you're like, this is gold. I can't believe it.
Oh my gosh. I mean, there were so many. I think that, I don't know if it was a piece of footage, but one of the things that I really wanted to do when we were telling the Spygate story was, obviously this could be a part of Bill Belichick's career. I know for a fact he doesn't really want to, and you can see him in the interview chair, he doesn't want to really relive it that much. But what I thought was remarkable about that moment wasn't as much that they got caught cheating, because that story has been told 1,000 times. What I liked about that story was that any other team with any other culture would have fallen apart at the seams. But because of the culture that Bill had created and because of Tom Brady's buy-in, because of everybody there's buy-in, that team, instead of folding, they wrapped their arms, you know, literally and figuratively around Bill. And they say, how do we feel about being coached by Bill Belichick? And they go, oh yeah. And one of our editors who grew up a couple towns outside of Foxborough, and had all the posters on the walls when he was growing up and everything, he cut the first version of that undefeated run, and he sort of described it like, these guys are all on the Death Star. They're the evil empire now, but they're all on the Death Star, and they're having a party as they go from planet to planet, destroying everybody in their path. And I just thought, how much more fun is this to like be with them and have Teddy Bruschi say something like, it kind of felt like we were the bad guys, and it kind of felt good. And that was like a different take on all of this. And this idea of like, you know, Bill at a low point probably for him is when everybody embraces him and they go on this ride, and it leads to this sort of operatic finish of going up against the Giants and losing in this, you know, incredible fashion. And so I think that the human story of all of these things, whether it's the betrayal in Scott Pioli's words by Eric Mangini or anything else, I think that's the stuff that always interests me more than the football.
Did you obviously reach out to Eric Mangini to speak? I assume he declined.
I did at one point. No, I definitely did. And I just said, I sort of the same thing that I tell a lot of people, which is, you know, you're obviously part of this story and you're going to be a character in this story. And what I always try to do with everybody, and it's what I try to do with Bill, frankly, when I ask him some of the tougher questions, is to give him the opportunity to comment, because I want them to tell their story and let me get out of the way as much as possible. And so we asked, and it was just, you know, he declined, and then, you know, we moved on.
When did you get the sense that, you mentioned Bill, that he was just going to kind of stonewall in a way and just really not kind of embrace the process here?
Well, I mean, look, I understand what you're talking about. When we get to some of the more difficult subject matter, whether it's Hernandez or Deflategate or, right, you know, even the benching of Malcolm Butler, he's definitely like that. But I also, you know, I think when there were subjects that we talked about that he wanted to talk about, whether it was calling Randy Moss and the club in Houston. And,
oh, that was
and
a great Randy, story, by the way. That's Randy, incredible.
Randy thinking that it's an Bill Belichick impersonator. Yeah. Bill loved telling that story. In episode 10, you know, basically to give your viewers a sense of how incredible the game plan was from Bill for the Rams Super Bowl, the second Rams Super Bowl, Bill and his coaching staff realized that the Rams, you know, basically don't play well against zone defense. But the problem was that the Patriots, and this is something that Devin McCourty actually tipped us off to, basically that the Patriots played man the entire season. And so in 2 weeks, Bill Belichick gets that team ready to play zone defense and stops one of the most sort of incredible offenses in NFL history. And I think holds them to 3 points in the Super Bowl. And at the end of it, Steve Young is, sort of doing commentary, and he says, "This is Bill Belichick's Mona Lisa." And so, you know, those moments are just incredible. And obviously, Bill lights up when you're talking about that kind of stuff.
What did you think of Bill? What's your takeaway?
My takeaway is that that Bill and Tom were perfect for each other. That basically, Bill Belichick wanted to create a culture where nobody was above the team. And in order to do that, he had to have buy-in from the star of the team. Now, Tom wasn't always the star. Bill's defense is definitely, according to everybody, including Tom, carried that team for the first, couple Super Bowls. But as Tom became a global celebrity and a, four, five, six time, winning Super Bowl quarterback, the fact that you would be a rookie and you get your signing bonus and you think you're, your hot stuff and you get into that locker room and then your first low light session, Bill Belichick is saying to Tom Brady, "I can get the quarterback from down the street to throw a ball better than this." And Tom Brady took it and it set the tone. And then on the other side, I think Bill was perfect for Tom because Tom is one of the most driven human beings on the face of the planet. But Bill always kept the carrot just out of reach. And I think they were the perfect combination for each other. And there's this moment at the end of the series where Tom Brady says, "It's perfect. It doesn't need to be anything more than that." And he's talking about their journey. And when I think about that, I don't want to put words in Tom's mouth, but to me, what he's sort of saying is, yes, there are incredible highs. There are also incredible lows. And we detail why Tom left, but it was perfect. And that's sort of how I interpret what he's trying to say.
I mean, Matthew, you're setting it up perfectly because when I dropped off yesterday, I thought to myself, and this is after, I guess this was like, I don't even know what number was the last one. But I thought to myself, we make jokes here in the studio about how Mac Jones needs a hug and he wasn't going to get it from Bill Belichick. But at one point, Bob Kraft says he didn't treat Tommy well, referring to Bill Belichick. And you wondered as you're watching the doc, if you're watching the split occur right before your eyes without having realized it in real time.
Yeah, I think, look, that's part of what makes the story complicated, right? On one hand, you can watch this and you can say, man, what if Bill had just, what if Bill just put his arm around Tom and said, "You're the greatest of all time. I love you, blah, 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 blah," and all this kind of stuff. But, I also think if I'm in Bill Belichick's shoes, like, why would I do that? Why would I change this thing that worked really, really well? And what if he had changed it too early and they hadn't won the sixth Super Bowl because of that? So yes, according to the people that were there, that was one of the reasons this thing fell apart. But I also think, why change something that worked so well? And everything eventually has to end. And as interesting and fascinating as the end is, and we really go into detail about that in episodes 9 and 10, I think it's equally fascinating, if not more so, that this thing lasted for as long as it did.
I mean, Matthew, I was logging it like a producer. I kept making notes like, "Matthew Slater, I felt like we lost the game even when we won," referring, of course, to how Belichick would break down a win.
Yeah.
And then Wes Welker saying, "I told Tom he was like an abused dog."
Sitting across from Wes Welker when he said that, my jaw was on the floor. I mean, it's a complicated story. The thing is, when Matthew Slater says that thing, it's shocking, but he also follows it up by saying, "But that's a credit to Bill. Nobody was above the team." And what he's trying to point out here is, yeah, it was like that, but it's part of the reason it worked so well.
There was a Danny Amendola who said, "We were something about Bill, but we played for Tom. Yeah,
that's great. But that's the thing is, they were perfect for each other.
Right.
Right. I mean, and look, let's not pretend that Tom wasn't just as sort of maniacal and driven as Bill is, Robert Gronkowski has talked at length about how for the first, however long, Tom was hard on him until he finally started running the routes the right way and doing all the things that Tom looked for. But I think that, what you do see is you see in that moment, right when they're about to go play the Falcons and go down 28-3 and everything, you see Tom hug Julian Edelman. and say, I love you, man. And I think that that's, again, another reason why they were just perfect for each other. There's a reason for all the success, and it's not necessarily, it's not always the sexiest thing, but it was all the behind the scenes work. It was just, they were just driven unlike anybody I'd seen. And they made everybody else get in line and sort of do things the way that needed to be done in order to win. Because I'll never forget, I was sitting across from Ernie Adams, who's the director of football research. And anybody who's a Patriot fan out there knows that Ernie is sort of this mysterious figure that nobody ever really got to talk to. And I was really lucky to. And I'm sitting across from him in our first interview that we do. And he says, everybody says they want to go to the Super Bowl, but not everybody is willing to do what it takes to get mm-hmm. there. And when mm-hmm. he said that, it was like, oh my gosh, like that's exactly what we're going to be trying to answer. What does it take to get there? And I think all of the things that we've been talking about today are the answer to that question. It might not always be pretty, but there is a reason why they got there over and over and over again.
Matthew Hamacek, the director and executive producer of the Dynasty New England Patriots. What about, in just two more minutes with you, the Drew Henson, Tom Brady autograph line story? That blew me away. What a window into his psyche.
Yeah, and it was Jay Flannelly, who's Tom Brady's friend in college at Michigan. So this is sort of, as Nora Princiati, who works at The Ringer, talks about, she said, and was at The Globe at the time, she says this is sort of part of the Tom Brady story, right? That you know, he is the seventh string quarterback when he starts at Michigan freshman year. And over the course of, you know, he's a fifth year senior by the end. And over the course of that time, he becomes the starter. But then all of a sudden, just when he gets there, this kid, Drew Henson, that Tom Brady says is smarter or is, you know, bigger, stronger, faster, more talented, all these things than he is, comes in. And the coach wants to go with Drew Henson instead of Tom at times. That's part of the Tom Brady story, according to Tom, to his family, to the people that played with him, is this guy. And the story that you're talking about is what Jay, he says, is sort of the birth of the Tom Brady look of death. And, you know, he always feels like the guy who didn't get picked. And then that, we sort of pair that with the drafting of Jimmy Garoppolo, his replacement, Tom saying, I'm playing till 45. And Bill saying, I'm looking at the data that says everybody falls off a cliff at a certain age and we need to prepare for the future. And then that leads to that going down 28-3. And then, in my opinion, you know, one of, if not the greatest sports comebacks ever. And then it's at that point in time, as when we're leaving episode 8, which is the one that aired last week, is when people start to talk about this idea of a change in Tom Brady's identity. This guy who was always willing to sort of, you know, as Michael Holly says, a great journalist, be a punching bag for Bill, maybe not so much anymore. And that, I think, that change may be part of the beginning of the end of all of this.
Last question. Who did not go on camera with you that you wish had?
I don't know. I think we found the people that we needed to tell the complete story. And what I mean by that is, even when Bill wasn't able to or wasn't willing to go into great detail about, you know, what his feelings about why he, you know, wanted to sideline Alex Guerrero, which is a big point of contention in episode 9, one of the things that I was really, really lucky to have are people like Ernie Adams, who I could go to and I could say, hey, Ernie, I don't want to make this the simple story. I don't want it to be clean cut and everything. I need you to tell me why the coaching staff wouldn't want to have somebody in there like Alex Guerrero. You know, what Ernie says on camera is, he says, look, all these players can go see anybody they want to in their own time, but you can't have somebody inside the building that's going against your strength and conditioning staff. And so to be able to get balance and nuance and complexity into the story, I feel like we were really, really lucky to have all the pieces there that we needed. But there's great stuff on the cutting room floor. I mean, I'll give you an example. I got Rex Ryan, and he's so interesting to talk to, but one of the best things that he talked about, I said, you know, Rex, there's this great moment where Wes Welker does this press conference, and it's just after the foot fetish video comes out, and he like finds a way to work the word foot into every single thing that he says. He says, like, we're going to go out on the field and be good little foot soldiers, and he says all these things like this. And Rex admitted to me on camera, so I can say this, that when Wes Welker got married, he sent him a pair of rubber feet.
Fantastic.
As a joke. And I was just sitting there just like, oh man, I know that this probably won't fit into the larger story that we're trying to tell about what it takes to get to greatness, but this was gold. So there's so much stuff on the cutting room floor that I wish I could have used, but it was just incredible.
Well, I mean, Matthew, Chris and I are available for like a podcast. Like, let's get this going.
Absolutely. We're
live.
I'm calling Robert Kendrick. I mean, Kondrick. I mean, we have to do this. Robert, if you're watching, we'll shoot it here. We could talk about this for days, for years. Oh, we could make this last longer than the Patriots run. We're available. Yeah, you are a maestro.
Great job.
Fantastic.
Thanks, I appreciate you guys. Thank you so much for having me
on. Can't recommend it even more. Robert Kondrick, if you're listening, I'm just thinking this is a new podcast. Breaking down this dynasty. How incredible. If you haven't seen it, you guys, it is on Apple TV, available right here on Roku, and you have to see it. Let's go to break. When we come back, let's talk about the podcast we're going to do about this.
Let's do it.
I mean, come on. But donkeys.
Named one of the best personal finance podcasts, The Stacking Benjamin Show with Joe and his friends makes financial literacy fun.
I got an email today from the LenPenzo.com HR department. I find really interesting. I'm an employee of one at this company, but somebody from the HR department sent me an email telling me that I had a raise. If I just opened the attachment, I could see how much my raise was.
Make sure you click on the links that are in there, too.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I can't wait. I'm excited.
Find out more by searching the Stacking Benjamins podcast wherever you listen.
Hi there. Sorry for the interruption, but are you enjoying this show on Google Podcasts? You should know that the Google Podcasts app is going away this spring. That's right, going away, gone, as in no longer available. You can still enjoy this show elsewhere, though. Try out Spotify or Amazon Music, or maybe TuneIn is more your style. Whatever app you switch to. Be sure to follow so you never miss the next episode. And thanks for listening, wherever you listen.
Put your hands together for the most recent Heisman Trophy winner, Kyler Murray of Oklahoma. Where is that trophy right now?
I sleep next to it.
It's on your nightstand?
Yeah.
So it's Good Morning Heisman every day?
Yeah, type.
Seriously, it's right there next to, like, there's a night table next to Kyler Murray's bed and the Heisman Trophy's resting
there. Yes, sir.
That's amazing.
Have you ever woken up in the middle of the night and you've had it in your arms, like you've been spooning with it by accident?
No, there's no spooning.
There's no Heisman spooning? No. And by the way, I would absolutely spoon with the Heisman if I won the Heisman.
Now taking part in the Rich Eisen Show Throw Challenge, Kyler Murray, is this the first NFL Duke ball that you have thrown? That's an NFL. Oh, my God. You won't even answer that.
Wow.
Go for it, Kyler. Go for it. That's one. First one, here we go. That's two. Kyler Murray, everybody. That's three. By the way, that's four. Those are all Duke NFL footballs. Just wanted everyone to know that.
First overall pick.
That's four. That's five.
Wow.
These are the footballs Kurt Warner complained about. That's six. That's seven. That's my goodness. Here, let's get some. Here we go. Keep going.
I'm off.
You got one more?
Hold on, this is getting bad.
Here we go. No, yeah, it's getting bad. Yeah. You got seven for first seven. Good enough. Seven out of ten. Yeah. Kyler Murray. Good to see you, man. Congratulations, he won the Heisman and it seems the Rich Eisen throwing contest in the same year. That's a first. No one could ever take that away from you.
Wrapping up the second hour of the Rich Eisen Show, Susie Schuster in for Rich Eisen. Just got Rich's schedule for the day. Looks pretty good. Looks pretty good. I think he's going to have a nice couple days off. Sending me a video of the birds chirping, I'm just happy to say. Chris, a little breaking news. What do you have?
Mikey, hit it.
Here it comes.
And my eyes see.
Breaking news.
We have a trade, everybody. A trade.
Okay.
Now, this is like an NBA Major League Baseball type deal, guy. You don't really see a one-for-one trade in the National Football League, but the Arizona Cardinals are acquiring Desmond Ridder from the Atlanta Falcons in exchange for Rondell Moore. A straight-up one-for-one trade. Rondell Moore to the Falcons. Another offensive piece, TJ. They're kind of loading up over there.
I mean, you know what other offense was loaded up for Kirk Cousins the year he had Dalvin Cook and Justin Jefferson and Adam Thielen and TJ Hawkinson?
Didn't they win 13 games that year?
Yeah, and then what? You know, like, so I don't know, man. I'm not sure, you know, that this is going to work out the way everyone thinks it's going to work out in Atlanta. But I'm not a hater, so I wish them the best.
You're not a hater?
No, I think I'm the least of a hater on this set.
All right, so we got – so now the Falcons' offense now is Kirk Cousins, Bijan Robinson, like Tyler Algier still on the roster right now. We'll see if he gets moved, but he was really good last year. Drake London, Darnell Mooney, Rondell Moore, Kyle Pitts.
I mean, that's loaded.
Pretty good.
That's making a statement. Pretty loaded.
I like it. Best offense in the NFC?
The NFC? Like the entire –
NFC.
Like the entire conference.
Yeah.
The best offense.
Yeah, no?
No.
Okay. I mean, I'll hear rebuttals.
Well, there's the San Francisco 49ers. They're really good. The Philadelphia Eagles, they're really good.
The Cowboys.
So, I mean.
I don't know. Do you put the Cowboys up there?
I don't know.
Cowboys have two guys.
I don't know.
Hey, first of all, like I said, stop disrespecting our long snapper, man. I'm not going to have that, all right? You guys have been making a joke out of put some respect on Trent Sieg's name. You guys have been trying to disrespect my man all week. It's got to stop.
Takes a nice chunk out of the pie.
It's got to stop, Susie.
Well, what was your thought listening to Michael Irvin talk about his thoughts on the Cowboys?
Well, you know, we didn't have time on air, so I chopped it up with him off a little bit, and I just asked him, you know, as one of those Dallas Cowboys fans that, you know, has to hear about it all the time being in this seat that I'm fortunate enough to be. And I asked him, you know, you said Jerry wants to win, but he wants to do it his way. Well, you can't really have a caveat like that when it comes to winning, especially when your way has, I guess, technically never worked the way everyone always kind of assumes it was Jimmy Johnson who put that early 90s juggernaut together. So his way's never really worked that we can tell. And I, you know, like I said at the beginning of the show, when you're making that much money and things are clicking and everything else is doing great and every stadium that gets built, you get paid. Maybe that's not their priority. I don't know.
Good thing we've got Steve Kerr ahead. We've got a coach who knows how to win when he come back.
Oh, yeah. He's done a lot of winning.
But I have to tell you, TJ, I do feel for you. And again, the weight of the championships in New England weighs very heavy on our shoulders. Mm-hmm. It's hard to hold up all those rings. We're not winning anytime soon. So we're kind of, you know, joining you there.
You know, Susie and Chris, I was talking to Adam, the call screener. I just love putting that as his full name, Adam, the call screener. But, you know, I told him, look, man, I was in my late teens, early 20s when the Cowboys went on that run. And for me personally, and obviously this doesn't matter to a 25-year-old Cowboy fan, but I'd lived in Pittsburgh, right, for that whole run, and it was awesome growing up a Cowboys fan in Steeler country and always having to hear about it. So for me, the Cowboys being on that run, me living there and then actually beating the Steelers, that's the greatest times of my life football-wise. And even if the Cowboys won next year's Super Bowl, I'll never have that same feeling as I did because of the moment in time that it happened and, you know, where I was at. So I think I look at it a little differently. Like, yeah, we haven't won forever, but when we did win, I was in a great point in life. I was in a great city, and I was just loving it, and I was obnoxious, and I had fun. So maybe that's why I'm a little bit not as angry as a lot of the Cowboys fans, I guess, Suze.
Well, Steve Kerr is ahead. We'll talk to him. We'll talk about his thoughts on the state of the NBA and the Golden State Warriors. That is ahead right here on the Rich Eisen Show when we come back. Do not go anywhere.
Movies, TV shows, books, podcasts, and more. It's What Women Binge with Melissa Joan Hart and her friend Amanda Lee.
We have Lauren Bosworth with us.
Yay!
The Hills. So what is like your number one question from fans?
The primary question I still get asked was, "What is it real?" In 2024, to me, is a surprising question to get because I feel like everybody has been through the reality TV gauntlet at this point.
What Women Binge, wherever you listen.